Blog Talk Radio.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
John, did you see that one out here in the other? We got to come down, both of them at the same time. This whole thing.
Yeah, what's happening, everybody? K-Sun right here. Some of you probably know me as a Citizen Payne. Some of you know me as Eric Payne. But I'm K-Sun. Make no doubt about it. I'm Bill's son, too. And I was brought up in a city of revolution. Revolution. And so we might be facing a real revolution, not angry terrorists attempting to overthrow a government that their ancestors developed, that their ancestors wrote the little rules down on a piece of paper and acted like those were the end-all, be-all until they decided, until the descendants that we deal with in modern day decided that they didn't want to follow the rules that they established. That the competition that other people were bringing and other races and communities were bringing was just too much. Be powerful. We must have God on our side. We must look like the image of God. Sometimes I like to say out loud, the black man is God. And I can just imagine some heads exploding when they hear that. That they can't so much stand it. As I'm watching my sister Joy Reed in the background, you know, I had to mute her and put it on closed caption. But yeah, today's one of those days. You ever have one of those days where everything pisses you off and everybody? Yeah, been one of those couple of days for me. But on top of that, underlying, underneath all of that, is that we constantly, as black people, have that extra pressure, right? That extra amount of BS that we have to deal with, right? And it's the supremacy, white supremacy, white privilege or whatever. I was give you a perfect example, and this is not an indictment of the race. Maybe it was just the individual. And that's what we keep telling ourselves, right? It's just certain individuals that are racist. It's not the whole race as a whole, except for the fact that certain individuals that might make up the majority of the whole keep doing stuff to keep us down. Let me give you a quick example of the entitlement privilege. In Whole Foods, it was just raining like crazy. And I was talking to my neighbor who works there as I was picking up a few things before the show. And a young lady looked to be of European ethnicity. She had to get the carry bags, you know, the little basket you can carry around. So apparently, by mistake, she had picked up two of them that were stuck together. And we're in the aisle, me and my buddy were talking, and she was close by, and one of them fell, one of the ones, you know, you pick up two and they're stuck together. So one fell on the ground, fell on the floor. And she just kind of looked at it and looked around and left it right where it was. It might be a little thing to you all, or there's maybe some people come across the show and try to justify, like they always try to justify their actions. But it was such a moment of entitlement and just don't care. Just they'll pick it up. I mean, I could see if it was tied, but it's a constant example of these people. They're self-absorbed. Self-entitlement we have to deal with every step of the every day. I challenge my people of color. How long, when you start your date, when you leave the house, does it take before one of the colonizers gets on your nerves? Is it 10 minutes, 5 minutes, half hour, 20 minutes, a couple hours? I guarantee you it's within the first hour of your day that the colonizer is going to do, say, or you're going to see a story on the news that's going to really tick you off. So with that, we are as I'm looking at Joy Reid, I'm seeing that she's doing a segment on Joe Manchin is opposing big parts of Joe Biden's agenda as the Koch network pressures Joe Manchin. Everybody's wondering, oh, they're surprised about Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema or whatever the chick's name out of Arizona, that they're for the filibuster, or they don't want to end the filibuster. And acting like it's politics, and Manchin claiming that, you know, I don't want to end it, we should be bipartisan. He's a Dixiecrat, y'all. He's a Dixiecrat. They're Dixiecrats. They're Democrats, but they agree with Republicans. They live in Republican. They're Dixiecrats. They don't want black people to be free. Bottom line, here's what I always thought about politics and issues. If you know that something systematically hurts a group of people unfairly, and then you continue to engage in those practices or supporting those practices, then one could safely assume that you are anti those group of people. No two ways about it. And if you constantly support or try to obfuscate, I'm sure Byron or Wayne, you guys are going to correct me on that word, but if you try to get away from the responsibility of looking into the wrongs done by a certain group of people, oh, say, let's talk about the terrorists who invaded the Capitol on January 6, 2021, if you constantly try to find ways for them not to get the harshest penalty, for them not to get penalized for their actions, then one could assume that you were down with that, that you were supporting overthrowing the government, Mitch McConnell and all of these other Republicans who voted against that. One could assume that they are in cahoots with a conspiracy, with an overthrow of their government. But there is really no government, right? It's just fake. It's what these white supremacists have set up for their own needs and reasons and benefit. And they messed around and wrote some on some paper. And since they value contracts, they have to live up to the words that they wrote down until they decide they don't, right? Tulsa, Oklahoma, Greenwood, North Carolina, OC, I forget what we were talking about in Florida, all these towns across the United States that have been burned down when peaceful and newly freed slaves tried to have a life, and these savages just couldn't take it. Surely we must be the image of God. Surely I must be the original man. I don't give no I give no I like the young kids say. Let's bring the brothers in. Brother Byron Saunders. Oh, I think I might have disconnected you, Byron. Please call back. I pressed the wrong thing. Let's bring Wayne in while we're waiting for Byron. And he could give us a little update, Wayne, on what's going on in New York. What's up, Wayne? How you doing?
Eric? And I guess Byron will be calling back. And, yeah. You know, I agree with you. There are times when I wake up, I'm in bed watching the news or something like that, and I'll hear things that are, you know, incomprehensible to actually think that this is going on in 2021, you know, but they are. And I'm not saying, I don't want to paint with a broad stroke, not every white person I see are people of European ethnicity, you know, fit the same foul or jacket that you just spoke of. But I had an incident today that just reminded me so much of what you went through, and this is concerning. I live in two places, and my other place is in a more mixed neighborhood, and a lot of college students coming in from all over the country, you know, some are coming from rural areas. Many of them are coming from rural areas and not urban areas, and they're just getting a taste of what suburban or exurbia, coming from exurbia to suburban life and what it's like all about. And at one time when I was doing business with these students, I would tell them that, you know, more than 4 or 5 miles away from the center of the city, or at least to be the line entering the city, and from the time you cross that line, your world and your exposure to whatever cultures that you're used to will be radically different. Long story short, this person who is a renter in a building next door to mine. It could almost serve as a dormitory because it's just nothing but college students there. It was a very hot day. I don't know if she had classes. I don't even know if they're still in class, but it could be a trimester situation. But she decides to come down on this huge lawn. I'm trying to be as descriptive about this as possible. And she hardly has anything on. Now, Eric, I hate to even admit this to myself, but I'm almost 70 here. I've seen my share of women, you know, in the course of my lifetime, clothed and unclothed. But if you're going to create a spectacle and then all of a sudden, you know, you want to get in somebody's face because that person of adjoining properties of a different color and just raise that as an issue, he's looking at me. I'm just saying, look at yourself, young lady. I mean, what are you doing? This is not the beach. And next thing I know, a complaint will be filed, and the police are showing up. And I hate to go there, but, you know, with all the gray hair in my head, I guess I would be the suspect if this got out of hand. So I immediately called one of the owners just to apprise him of what was going on. And, you know, and as you mentioned, the thing that happened to you at Whole Foods, it's the mentality. It's the way some of them are, I'm not saying all, but some are raised. And there's just a modicum amount of respect left with a lot of these millennials who've had a decent education and have been aware. But a lot of them don't get the education at home, and regrettably, a lot of them are not getting it in school. They're being driven by social media and whatever social amenities that their friends are into, and that's it. And I don't know what to say. I don't give a damn how hot it is outside. If you're creating a spectacle, you know, it is what it is. And my ethnicity and the fact that, you know, I happen to drive up upon this situation should mean nothing. What the heck are you? You're not on my property, but the thing is you're joining me, and then you're trying to create a stink with some of your friends because someone next door is looking at you, you know. So I can identify with what you're saying, and there are probably other examples out there, you know, but that readily came to mind, and that was just a few hours ago, but, you know, I don't get it. I mean, it's like the Republican Party and conservative media is doing such a job at trying to alter the moral compass. They're trying to alter the changes that are going on with respect to making improvements. In the last 100 days that Biden has been in office, you know, he's gotten the vaccine out there in breakneck speed. You know, unfortunately, our community, the black community most notably, has not been completely vaccinated. But, you know, we're at a point now where Broadway's about to open. You know, they're about to loosen up restrictions in many of the businesses that you go into to save the economy. This is about our survival. But yet you got other people out there promoting this propaganda that just, you know, it's disgusting. I'm just saying, we're in the same boat. I mean, God forbid, we're in an era now where we're being hacked. Hacking a business is like the new Pearl Harbor or the new Vietnam. You know, we can't afford to be second-guessing and sidestepping and acting stupid at this point. So
Who's the we you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about America. I mean, you know, Americans in general, en masse. In other words, we want this democracy to stay the way it is. We're not looking for things to turn into an autocracy or have these subversive militia groups suddenly change the equation whereby that they don't even know what they're doing. The fact that, you know, that they know full well an insurrection occurred on January 6th and they're acting like as if it was just a normal day at the Capitol where, you know, you know, tourists got out of hand. I mean, it's crazy. And you stop there and you think about what goes on a regular basis. You just kind of wonder. It's hard to distinguish those who know better, because there are quite a few who do, but it just seems the ones that don't get all the attention, and then it's amplified through social media and conservative media. And I really think, and I hate to sound repetitive, and I've been beating this drum for a long time, but there's got to be some regulation of what's being put out on the air, because people, there are a lot of dumb people in this country who don't know. They just follow what their favorite person or TV personality in the Donald Trump example, what they believe and what they got to say.
I just think they're all racist. I mean, you were talking about America. I am not hopeful. I don't even believe in the politics now. I believe in the public service, but I also believe that everything have individuals. It's hard. You have individuals. People have personalities, and it's hard for a lot of personalities to get on the same page. Therein lies part of the problem why black people can't move forward, because sometimes you get individuals, you're going to work for the people, and they end up working for themselves, or they co-opted. Like Rick Schreier said back in the day, everyone was marching down to the whatever place, and they were hiring that day. Is our objective met because they were hiring, or is our objective not met, and that was used as a ploy taking of some, still screwing the man. But the whole side of America is really, you know, I have a bad attitude today anyway. So, but when I look on pictures and see this clown Donald Trump was able to be elected because he was a rich white man who had no experience, no decency, nothing about him that is good, except I guess if you're a white supremacist, then it works out for you. But this guy, he's a piece, he's POS, like people say on the Texas, but in food text, know what that means. It's unbelievable. So, you know, the fact that we are, and Byron, I'm going to open your mic real quick, but and just finish. The fact that we are privileged to be somewhat middle class people, black people, in the realm of just across the American middle class. The majority of our people are still catching hell, and that's the whole thing. How do we move a race forward all on one accord when there are so many different people with so many different perspectives, and they don't have the vision to know what things are important to hold up the overall mission and what things are not, you know? Sometimes people get so bogged down trying to survive or to deal with one particular issue, personality, we can't get our whole mission to get everybody free. And they're fast at work, people. They're fast at work. You see what they're trying to do in Texas, as they're trying to create history again with their propaganda, not talking about the truth of the history. And this Texas governor today that signed a law, the 1836, about Texas' independence or what kind of wacky stuff. They keep reiterating their history. They already told their history, but now, or their lottery is their history, because, you know, I think truth story is the truth. But they already told that. But now that people are getting into the real truth, now they want to continue to make up the propaganda, make these lies, anti-critical race theory. Blacks weren't really slaves, they were workers. All these states across the country, these Republican racist states promoting these things. So their agenda, this country was never real to begin with. It's a whole lie. It's built a whole damn lie. Go ahead, Byron. Byron, this legendary history that's with us, everybody.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
A piece of history that is relative to Texas history. Memory serves me correctly that this being the 9th of June, 10 days from now, there's a celebration all across the state of Texas and now all across the United States called Juneteenth. And the reason why there is a Juneteenth celebration was once again to debunk a lie that the entire state of Texas refused to let its slaves know for 3 years that they had been freed by the Emancipation Proclamation. So you tell me about the character of a state that lied to hide the fact that black people, slaves, had been freed. So you have a situation. I'm going to ask y'all an intellectual question relative to logic. Does it seem logical to you why we should be paying prices that are high, since 2.3 million of the 4.6 million was recovered to give back to colonial by the federal government? And so I want to really understand, why are we paying colonial higher taxes on gasoline when they got the help that they sought? Government bailed them out again. Is there some kind of shade going on, gentlemen?
Some kind of shady. Do you know where you live? You live in the United States, bro. There's some kind of shady going on every day, every second of the day up in this piece.
Okay.
You know what time it is.
The Juneteenth celebration is once again, that was back in 1865.
Hmm.
Okay. We're 21st century. 2021. But wait a minute, hold on. In the state of Texas, there's no such thing as systematic or systemic racism. So you have to question these, connect these dots, and begin to question, you're right, the rationale of individuals who are sworn to protect and serve, yet every day they're trying to manipulate and circumvent the very laws that they created for everybody. And now we are in that situation, because I'll tell you, you want to be sick and tired of being sick and tired? Well, I'm sick and tired of being on this plantation called Washington, D.C.
Yeah, right.
I've had my fill. Okay? And they're still playing that tiddlywink game down there on the Capitol Hill? Political chicken with each other?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's about power, and we as people need to understand that you obtain power. I no longer believe that a police force should be majority white. I no longer believe that it should be the majority of any one particular group. But I certainly don't believe that an entire white police force should be policing a black area. Because whilst not every white person is racist, I know that there will be a few within that mix that will be racist. I know that there will be a few that cannot control their temper and might get out of the way. Wayne,
I'm on the air. Let me call you back.
All right. Anyway, we know that there will be a few that cannot contain their temper. We know that there will be a few that have a racial bias. And there'll be a few that just like to beat people up. But it happens so often, and the amount of discretion that is given to people that look like them, other people I'm talking about, usually is so uneven in terms of the way it is dispersed. Unbelievable, right? We have shootings almost every day on a daily occurrence in America. It's kind of like that's by design, right? And like I was saying before, something must be afoot. All of these laws in California where the guy said having an AR-15 like a Swiss Army knife, a judge said that as he lifted a ban on AR-15 assault rifles, so for people to own. And we talked about Texas, once again, that Klansman down there that runs the state made it legal for anyone over 21 to buy a gun with no, you don't need nothing, it's like going by Tic Tacs. So there seems to be a plan afoot, right? I think it is to arm as many of these white supremacists as possible, as many of these crazy ones as possible, to make guns available to those people that might be criminals, therefore creating a precursor for law enforcement to come even harder and say, we need strong law enforcement. We need to come down because these guns are a threat. That's what they're going to try to do. Entire creating a South Africa apartheid style government. If you look at what all four, three of the states are trying to do with voter restriction rights, restricting vote rights of African Americans. So it's already taken place in Georgia where they're trying to do that. They're trying to strip the power of secretaries of state, right? I'm sure you guys have heard about that. They're trying to enable state legislatures to be able to have the power to overthrow elections, overturn elections. So,
you know,
talk about seeing the whole for the whole puzzle coming together. Go ahead, Byron.
The one of the things that you see the Democratic Party is going to have to own up, and that includes Joe Manchin and even the Republican woman from Kentucky. Joe Manchin, pay attention. The reason why you can have this voice and the power is because the power of black voters created 4 more million voters than the one that lost. That's called majority, Manchin. And if you don't get it and understand it, be very aware you can be rolled over just like the GOP.
You know, Byron, what gets to me, and I don't mean to interrupt, but, you know, there was a clandestine meeting that came out in the open yesterday with a number of prominent civil rights leaders where they sat down with Joe Manchin.
Yeah.
And he seemed visibly moved by what he heard after the meeting occurred, and you figured that it would have swayed his thinking, you know, that we don't have to go down this path again. And it just bothers me that.
Okay.
Come again?
It only did that. It only did that momentarily. You saw it for a flash.
Well,
and turned it back.
What does it take? I mean, him and McConnell, what do we have to do?
Well,
we got
already
them out of office. They're racist. They're racist. That's no motherfuckers out of office. They racist.
Right.
That's what it takes.
That's right.
Wayne, I understand. I appreciate very noble approach to assuming that people have the best interests and best, you know, because you're hoping, hearing your voice, that you're hoping these people have the best intentions forward, but they don't. And as soon as we realize that you can't come to a deal with Republicans because that's not their objective. Their objective is to destroy everything that we're going to put together. So we need to stop trying to talk to them, right, and just move on and do what we have to do, right? That's how you win. That's how you win the war.
Exactly. But, you know, here's the flip side of that, gentlemen, is that playing the scenario out, as you indicated at the beginning, Eric, this is called the power game. Certain. Joe Manchin is getting a chance to prove either he can swing the big bat, because he's in the fourth spot right now. Swing it, Joe, because if you can't bring 8 more Republicans to the table to beat the filibuster, your concept and idea is DOA. And you will be swept off to the side because there's an alternative to Joe being given the chance to kind of make it a bipartisan, you know, delightful kumbaya moment. But even in the eventual end, even if that doesn't happen, the reality is this. We still have enough votes to make it very clear that either you will step up, just like John McCain did and did his thumbs down on the GOP maneuver to beat the Affordable Care Act, or are you going to step up to the plate, Joe Manchin, and do a thumbs up and be that hero that will secure the state of West Virginia, as backward as y'all are, additional funding to help support your initiative? That's the power game, Joe Manchin. You got a chance, baby. Don't blow it.
That's right.
From your lips to God's ears, I hope.
That's the way the game is played here in D.C., folks.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about power. They care nothing. This is the thing that trips me out. You know, I've seen since I've been a kid, some people in power, they don't care anything about the masses. Even our own, there are some people who don't care. And want to maintain those positions. So when you get individuals who never made as much money as they make in elected office, the newly elected office, they're not doing anything really to rock the boat today. They're not going to do too much because now, hey, look, I'm able to take my entire family on a nice vacation. I'm making six figures now. I was never making so I'm making high five figures now. I was never making that for it. And so these are conversations I've had with my dad. He talks about people should do things for the integrity and all that. I'm like, yeah, that's great, Dad. That's a great world. But the reality of it to me is that people don't do that. They're going to do the best for them. Therein lies the problem of our black struggle in this world, because even our own sometimes, all you got to do is look at individual like Tim Scott or Republicans who somehow that cozying up with master is still going to get us freedom. Wow. So you got the time. I mean, I've had individuals, you know, like I said, they get in a certain position, they act brand new, and they get it. I mean, fortunately, I'm in Hollywood, so I recognize that sickness, that affliction of newfound fame, money, and everything else that makes you the weak individual act differently, right? I've seen people act on Capitol Hill. I'll tell you a story right now. I was on Capitol Hill with my cousin down, and we were in a cafeteria area, standing there, and another member of another congressional member from Florida who got defeated. She got defeated. Another congressional caucus member walked up, and I'm standing there with him, and I guess he just assumed that I'm staff because she walked up and looked up and down and just spoke to him and didn't say anything. Could have checked it. And my cousin, and after a minute, they all these, oh, this is my cousin. And she's like, oh. But yeah, 2 minutes ago, I was just a staffer. You looked me up and down like I wasn't important. And so for me, if I was a staffer looking up to these black leaders, what kind of impression would that behavior leave on me? This is what I'm talking about. This is the type of attitude I'm talking about. When you stand up there to say you're going to represent a group of people, and you should represent them, man, and you should understand that the position that you're in requires you to behave a certain way. Simple as that. You can't behave your same way. That's why you don't see running for office yet. Trump came because, you know, I didn't have the temper for that. Politics and just the day-to-day, the office politics and bullshit. The more turned off I am, you know. I'm dealing with stuff that is making it hard. It makes it hard to get stuff done. Hey, man, our bills are paid, man. You know, I don't need to go through that. But there's people that are depending on us to do the right thing, so they could give their kids a better future, so they could put food on the table for their families. There are people whose lives really depend and hang in when the government decides to cut the extended benefit. When the Texas governor decides to say, put up, he said, before the pandemic, $50,000 a year, it made $50,000 a year. It cost me $31,000 to for child care and stuff. And now you want to take away my benefit and have me go to work as a waiter for less than $20,000 a year. The person was like, thanks. You know what, to the governor of Texas. Because, you know, like the whole narrative that they created, giving away free money, nobody wants to come back to work. Well, maybe you should pay them what they're worth. Maybe we finally need to deal with the minimum wage in this country and give people a livable working wage. Maybe that's what it tells you. Or maybe they're just living like all the rich people who pimp the system. Maybe for once all of those people are able to get ahead with their bills. Maybe they're able to put a little something aside. Maybe. But here these people go and try to find them and try to, man, their constant lies is just, you know, I have trouble even watching the news at night, because if you're too close to the BS, and Wayne, you know this, being both of you guys know this, being on the radio or reporting the news every day, you know, you kind of get burnt out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and I think that's the thing. that I grapple with all the time. I mean, there's a part of me that I felt when I formally handed in my GO card to retire that I know that the world wasn't perfect, but I felt that with all the accomplishments that we had done and with the advent of a Barack Obama, you know, getting into office, that, you know, the world is changing. You know, I mean, we spent a lot of time trying to straighten out the ills of George W. Bush and Cheney and that crew. But when I juxtapose what happened way back at the beginning of this century compared to what we went through the last 4 years, you know, that to me was nothing. That was like going to church. It was, you know, it was like somewhat sanctimonious. I mean, certain things were done. There were certain things none of us would want to relive, like 9/11 and all that. But when I compare what happened then to what's going on now, it's like two different worlds. And I'm in my third act, and I get what you talk about, Eric, all the time. I mean, I listen carefully how you choose your words and things that you say to, you know, to critique what's going on with government. And I agree largely with a lot of what you have to say, but I still have this hope. I don't know. I mean, I talk to my friends, especially people within my age group who came to this country, poor, small, hoping that, you know, this would have been a better existence compared to what, you know, our families came out of. And they knew it wasn't a perfect world, but I'd like to think there have been enough studies out here to show that, you know, the racism in this country is costing this country. It's not only hurting the economy, it's hurting us, period.
Right.
You know? And it's sad. And it's unfathomable that here in 2021 we're still going through this. And maybe, you know, the movements of what went on last year with George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, et cetera, has awakened a certain part of the electorate. But it's that other side that just doesn't seem to want to listen and just believe some of the horse crap that you hear from those talking heads who really are just doing it for entertainment. There's nothing factual about what they're promoting. And they do a very cogent job. So, I mean, I point to that all the time because that's what annoys me. I don't know what other people may look at. You know, maybe it's just the, you know, the overall actions of most Republicans now. And you know, we have a lot of work to do. I mean, Democrats cannot afford, we made gains, but we cannot afford to fall asleep. And one thing that you say all the time, Eric and Byron, that we need to tell our story. You know, those who are knee-deep and traditional Democrats who are trying to make a change, because I would hate this guy. To me, the wheels of justice is not moving fast enough to put Donald Trump in his place. You know, it's going to happen, but it's just not happening fast enough for me. And I look at everything, and I'm just saying the fact that he could go into North Carolina last week and talk all this smack about, you know, telling the lie and getting the audience aroused to thinking that, you know, he was a victim of the voting process and all that business, and that he continues to echo this, and he's got, you know, his cadre of elected officials in the House and Senate that believe it. You know, they want to continue this lie because they think that's what it's about. It's their survival. You know,
yeah, that's exactly
and
what it
is. Unfortunate.
White supremacist survival to continue the reign of white supremacy in the United States. That's why they're trying to rewrite the history books. They're trying to take away the right to vote for black people. They're trying to do everything within their power. And the fact that this man, people could still talk about him running for office with a straight face, even the ones who claim to be on our side, CNN, MSNBC, there are certain individuals who still keep talking about, we've got 74 million. Yeah, Joe had more, 80 million. Why do you keep talking about this? Yes, let's keep an eye on him. Why are they talking about him in a normal sentence to suggest that it is okay to suggest that this man could ever run for office again to January 6th? Why is that not a non-starter? Yeah, we're not even considering that. People, but the more they say it, and not just them on the Fox Network and all these other racist networks that they have, because they're more than just entertainment. They're racist entertainment. They're white supremacist entertainment to keep that propaganda going. Just like the Daughters of the Confederacy did when they lied to change the textbooks way back under the whatever years ago it was. These guys have a mission, man. And the ones that are pimping it even more, they're making more money off of it. So you know, it's not a question of what's going on in America. I clearly see their mission. For example, I watched a black guy who has a show on MSNBC, and as he was describing, I have to watch our words, but as he was describing white supremacy and people rejecting it, he said there's an assault on white supremacy and people are rejecting people of color. Even white people are rejecting white supremacy. How would you use the frame? Would you use that word in describing people rejecting white supremacy? There's an assault on white supremacy. This is what I'm talking about. Strong. We need to be strong words. No mealy-mouth stuff. Say what we mean. Let's make this happen for our people. Otherwise, sit the fuck down and shut up. You're having these jobs that you want to say and be mealy-mouth stuff, man. Come on. I'm in a bad mood.
I hear you, brother.
I'm in a bad mood. You know,
yeah.
And seeing constant BS over and over again, it's too much to deal with at times. It's like we're working against ourselves, you know, or working against ourselves always. And
I don't know. It's got to change. It's got to stop. You know, it's just it's crazy.
The silver lining in this equation of despair is that the foundation that was on crumbling sands is being restored. I mean, to think about the optics of, yes, we wish the change and the arc of change would happen almost immediately, but there has to be a solid foundation for truth that was in an hourglass running out of time on its own evidence is now being put back into a much more solid position. And yeah, it's weird, believe me. I get up wondering, why am I still on this plantation? Okay? Mm. But we see the evidence of change. The world stage, as of today, is seeing the restoration of credibility from the position of the United States of America, and it's called diplomacy.
Yeah.
See, that's the part that we have been in such an engaged, confrontational format. Everything had to be confrontational. Well, you know, you don't win the war by always trying to fight the war. At some point, you're going to run out of men to fight, bullets to shoot, guns to aim.
Ain't going nobody
you
know? Else to
and at what point? At what point do you spend all the trillions and trillions of dollars to create what you keep wanting to avoid as Armageddon, and yet you keep marching directly toward it?
Yeah.
Hey, that's the logic of what the heck? Like you, Eric and Wayne, I hear you, my brothers. It's very frustrating. You know, listen, my mother-in-law is in the hospital. This is how frustrating it is. You used to be able to go into a hospital and visit your family in time of their need. Now, yeah, she's 96 years old, but she's in the hospital, and as a result of COVID and COVID protocols in the hospital, now she's at George Washington Hospital. This ain't no cheap fly-by-night hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can only have one visitor per day per family.
Wow.
Now, what do you think about that? You're 96 years old. You're already feeling the pangs of loneliness because you're in a position where you know your time is short and you can only get one person per day.
Yeah.
That's
why
that's
is that?
The insanity that we are engaged in as, in this bubble that, that we've been placed in. But yes, the bubble is starting to reduce itself. It's starting to crumble. But it, it took all of this time to release that, because in a care facility, it's even worse than that.
Yeah.
And yes, that's and, where COVID will. Now, she doesn't have COVID. She's just failing health.
Yeah.
Let's look at the result of why I want to talk about seeing the picture. So that's the protocol now. I'm going to put a period in this, guys, because I got a guest on holding on. I want us to talk to her a little bit as we have the sure. 15 minutes of the show. But when we're talking about the picture, right? And at, that tree is in that position as a result of the lack of action or the intentional lies of 4-5, right? His lack of action,
yeah.
His lies about COVID. So as a result, everybody comes jammed up because of his jackass, his lies and all that stuff that he was trying to do. It's unbelievable, but I won't forget about all that. I'll talk about something that makes me happy, and it is success of friends always make me happy. Got on the line. I'm going to bring him on. From, it's my good friend. Met this brother a long time ago. And I actually met mother first. She was executive producer of the movie School Day that I did with Spike Lee. And I met this brother just, I can't remember where we met. I think it was sure at that time sometime, but he was worked in production. He's also an actor. And my sister was working. And he's a good guy, a good brother. And you know, you and when I always talk about this individual, or you have other friends who like other individuals who know that this is a solid, good brother, and you're happy when your friends have success. So my boy, Andre Blake, has received the role on New Amsterdam, the TV show. I did a part on the doctor. He got a better part. The doctor.
Right.
Andre Blake. And Dre, what's up? Why don't you say hello to Wayne Gilman?
What's going on, E? How y'all doing?
Might have heard me.
All right, all right. Good to have you on.
Dre, you might have Byron Saunders, our legendary historian, Brother Byron Saunders.
Welcome to the show, my brother.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, fellas. I appreciate
it. So in case you haven't seen Dre Blake before, you've seen him in the movie Philadelphia trying to put Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
And you also seen him in it was a great scene, high profile gig. That's why I'm mentioning it. Also in The Stepmom with Julia Roberts. Now the TV show, the hit series New Amsterdam. Just tell briefly, Jay. You know, Andre, this show came up. I was going to get an audition for it. I was on the show, but they didn't see me. And I had just done the second episode. This role came up, and so Andre got an audition. And he comes with the idea, and you know what? I'm just going to shoot this. And the character, you can say it now, right? Because the episode already aired.
By all means.
So his character is it's a great character introduction. His character is pushing a gurney, intercepts a gurney from another doctor and says, I'll take over from here, chief of surgery. And so Andre comes up with the idea and says, you know what? I'll shoot this. I'm going to hold the camera down here like the gurney, and we're going to walk and talk and do that because it's one of them walk and talk doctor scene. So me, Byron, you might notice, be tuned to this as well. You gonna do all that, right, Dre? You gonna do all that?
You sure you want to do all of that, Dre? Like, I'm sure.
There's a lot of stuff going on. You know, he's got to hold the camera, remember the line. We're walking, talking. So there was a lot of stuff to concentrate on. Don't you know that I called my agent? I was like, and my episode happened to air like the next night or something, right, Dre? And they cut me out the show, and I called her. I said, they're still available. They didn't see me the first time. They cut me out. She's like, well, they have somebody in mind. Duh. Lo and behold, they got Andre. He took a chance. They hired him in the show. So, last night it was his debut. Going to be a recurring role on NBC. Yeah. And it was great last night. Blake, how do you feel with all of your
– You know, it's really interesting because we as actors so very often, you know, we're like, if I can get six episodes or three episodes so that, you know, the powers that be can see you in that light. And, listen, I've been very fortunate. I've had a wonderful voiceover career, which is helped me tremendously. As you know, Eric, I trade in the stock market, which has helped me tremendously. So I feel as if I walked into that audition really with nothing to lose. I was like, I got the world to gain and nothing to lose. If I don't get the part, you know, my life goes on. I'm a single dad of a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old, which, you know, has its own set of challenges. And so I just, you know, I say all that to say, you know, when we get an opportunity to do those things that we love to do, it, and then actually get the gig, it's really nice. It's just really nice. It's a confirmation and a validation of all those years of hard work and trials and tribulations, and it feels good. It feels really, really good.
Yeah, and you talked about, I forgot to mention that Andre, yeah, he's got a very extensive voiceover career. He was the voice, you were the voice of BET for a while.
I was the voice of BET for approximately 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have a background in radio?
You know, it's funny that you asked me that, because when I was living in Los Angeles, I don't remember the name of the school, but I went to this school and they, you know, teach you how to make your demo and, you know, put together this reel of what, you know, your show could sound like. And I did a little R&B thing, which was really kind of cool. And I thought about pursuing it, but, you know, life happens, you know, and kids.
Oh, having spent 40 years, close to 40 years in radio, it ain't what it used to be. But the reason why I ask is because it seems like voiceover work, there's a conduit with a lot of voiceover people who've come out of radio, and it seems like the actors are now getting most of the work from what I could see. You know, no jealousy, no disrespect.
And Wayne was on the radio with my mom for about 25 years on WLIB radio.
Man.
And you probably recognize his voice as Byron was on WPAI. So Andre, being from Long Island, Wayne is familiar with the station. And so back in those days, you got
Strong Island, baby. Strong Island.
That's right.
Freeport Hempstead. Come on now, represent.
Come
on now.
You and Chuck D and the crew.
Yes, Roosevelt. All of that. Roosevelt playing ball at Roosevelt Park. Come on now.
Okay. All right. There you go.
So you talked about something really briefly. We've got like 6 minutes left, Dre, but you talked about, you know, it's interesting when actors going for auditions, you know, when you're desperate or you really could need the job, you go in with a different type of energy, a different type of confidence, as opposed to when you're making money. The job, you would like to get it, but it's not going to be the end all be all. It's not going to hurt you financially. You know, when you go in with it, and also too, when you're a seasoned professional and you know that you're good, you go in with a different energy, right?
For sure. Most definitely. You know, it's a real interesting place. I remember I found myself in Cedar Rapids, Iowa at Coe College. Don't ask, that's a real long story. But I was out there during my collegiate career and was in the theater department. And we did this play by Noel Coward. And they dressed me up as this older, distinguished gentleman and put a beard on me and whited the beard out. And I remember the head of the department, this gentleman named Michael Pufall, he said, Andre, when you get older and you grow into yourself, you're never going to stop working. You're going to start and you're never going to stop.
Uh-huh.
And I always thought to myself, okay. You know, I'm 6'4". I'm a tall dude, you know, raised by this tribe of women. So I like clothes. I've been called elegant. And I've found that there aren't roles out there for a 6'4" elegant black man. There's not. You know, if you ain't the thug or the whatever, you know, I got a lot of jobs where I was the white collar criminal or the lawyer or the doctor or something like that. And But I feel like I'm at a place in my life where I'm okay with who I am. And I think that makes a huge difference. Friends of mine who I see working a lot, there's one gentleman, a friend of mine, his name's Robbie Morgan. Robbie's killing him right now. And the one common denominator that I often see in brothers who work a lot is this, as my father would say it, this unshakable love and respect for themselves. Because you walk in the room differently.
That's right.
You walk in the room different. There's no desperation on you. Desperation reeks. And, you know, you can want it so bad that you can want yourself right out the job.
Yeah.
You know, and so you reach a point, I believe, when you do mature and embrace who you are and embrace your body and for all its faults and embrace your voice and your way of being and all of that. And you just walk in the room and you're just you and you just let it all hang out. Like it or leave, you know, like it or not, this is who I am.
Right.
And when you can reach that space, I think good things come. No matter what the arena.
When you clue into that, like, this is who I am, this is how I impress people, like I think we discussed before, and we got about 2 minutes, and Byron, I know you want to jump in real quick with some acting stuff, but I realized that I impress people when I walked into a place, like someone who was a little bit stern, you know, and kind of observing, like a cop. People say, you look like a cop. You're coming off like a cop. You know, even when I was in places where they didn't allow certain type of activities and I needed to pick up certain supplies, people would think I was a police officer. And, you know, that helps, you know, because then I was like, hey, there's always going to be work for cops. Good versus evil is always going to be a theme. And if I impress people like that, let me capitalize on that. So really briefly, we got to jump off. Byron, you want to say something real quick as we got 90 seconds?
I'll key out right here, but it's always a pleasure to talk to my brothers and sisters who are movers and shakers in our industry. It's our time, so carpe diem. Seize the moment. Go for it.
Sir.
We have the power.
Sir.
Need your power for good. Peace out.
There
always.
It is.
There it is.
Thank you. Thank you, Byron Saunders. There it is, B. Thanks with the last word there. Andre Blake, thanks for calling in, Dre.
Thank you.
Do it again.
Thanks for having me. Y'all be
well. All right, man. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Peace.
Brother Wayne Gilman. Give the people
hey, man. You know, it's just exciting just listening to him. It's like a Joel Osteen moment about empowerment, not the maybe a poor analysis or, you know, but I'm trying
that
to say, it, you know, it, when I heard him speak about empowerment and how it's helped him, meant a lot. You know, we need to have him back again.
That's right. You needed to hear that, brother. We all needed to hear that. There is Wayne Gilman, ladies and gentlemen, a legendary newsman. We'll talk again. This has been Kay's Son and Friends. I was glad to get my buddy on there. You guys got to forgive me. I'm a little bit on one, but I know we're all on one every now and again. So listen again, Kay's Son and Friends, Wednesday. This is live. We're going to do another episode. I want to start doing more arts, but we still got a lot of work to do. And we have a mission for the future generations. I'm Eric Citizen Payne. This is Kay's Son and Friends. My mom's on assignment in heaven.
Nobody's pushing me anywhere, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushes, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
John, can you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work.
Look, nobody's closing me out of my business.